to learn what will happen 50 years from now regarding W map.
Okay, so I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. And maybe I don't want to thank them for giving me the title of my talk. Cosmology 50 years from after WMAP is quite an ambitious title. And initially I was stunned when I was asked to talk about this. But gradually I slightly warmed to the idea with some reservations though. 50 years is an awfully long time. So I think I will be a little bit more conservative. I will talk about 25 years after WMAP. So let me leave the stage and come back. So we are here at the Perimeter Institute today in 2027 to celebrate 25 years after the initial unofficial data release of the WMAP satellite. And I think we should all remember the beauty of this picture. So this is an all-sky projection of the temperature distribution of the cosmic microwave background. And even though we've all been accustomed to this, we've all seen this picture for more than 30 years, we should remember some history. We should remember that in 1968, long time ago, there was a prediction by Sachs and Wolf that microwave anisotropy should be seen with an amplitude of about 10 to the minus 3. That was a prediction. Now, a long time after this prediction was made, in about 1990, the experimental status was that no anisotropies were discovered to a level of better than 10 to the minus 4. So the prediction is 10 to the minus 3. The experimental status was 10 to the minus 4. So at this stage in the past history, a long time ago, more than 50 years ago, cosmologists became very worried about the fundamental principles of standard Big Bang cosmology. And there were some theoreticians, in fact in Toronto, who postulated that there actually might be a phase of cosmic loitering between recombination and today. Cosmic loitering means a phase in which the universe is not expanding. So there were modifications of the standard Big Bang model which were proposed to reconcile this prediction with this observational fact. Now, in light of some other issues in cosmology, it's important to remember that this prediction was made in the dark ages of cosmology. In fact, in the pre-dark ages of cosmology, where it was assumed that all matter was baryonic. No dark matter. And back in 1990, it was already clear from various other sources that most of the matter in the universe had to be non-baryonic, dark. But back to the CMB, so in the period between 1990 and 2003, in this interval, we went from having pictures of the microwave background anisotropies, which looked like this. So I'm not hiding anything. This is the status back in 1990. No anisotropies. To beautiful maps like this. So this was a triumph of experimental cosmology. And this triumph of experimental cosmology was a confirmation of the paradigm, the old paradigm of early universe cosmology. Which relied on two key features. Firstly, the existence of non-baryonic dark matter. In fact, cold dark matter. And a phase of cosmological inflation. So these were the two ingredients in this old cosmological paradigm. So let me first of all address this issue of dark matter and remind you how the postulate that most of the matter in the universe is non-baryonic, how this can resolve this conflict. So if we look at the evolution in time of the density contrast, and we follow this from the time of equal matter and radiation to the time of recombination to the present time, then in a model without dark matter, without cold dark matter, with only baryons, the density perturbations decrease in amplitude between equal matter and radiation and recombination. They scale as a to the minus 1/2, where we always deal with a metric in this form, usual Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric. And afterwards, they grow linearly in time, linearly in the scale factor. Whereas if you have cold dark matter, there's no coupling of the matter to the photons, and you get continuous growth proportional to the scale factor. And so therefore, the density perturbations, if we work backwards from the presently observed density perturbations to equal matter and radiation, we get that the primordial density perturbations in the no dark matter model are larger than in the dark matter model by a factor of about 30, which is a reconciliation of this prediction with the observational results, which came in starting about 1992. So this was a successful post-prediction of the hypothesis that something like cold dark matter exists. And although in 2002 there were quite a few cosmologists who were willing to abandon cold dark matter or dark matter in favor of some modified theories of gravity, one should not have forgotten this fact of history. So let me now turn to the second ingredient of the old paradigm of early universe cosmology, namely inflation. So inflation is the hypothesis that there is a period of finite duration in the very early universe, long before the time of nuclear synthesis, during which the scale factor expands exponentially, or at least accelerates. So this is cosmological inflation. So now, in light of the new paradigm of all universe cosmology, we might have forgotten that about the key successors of this old paradigm. So let's remind ourselves of the key successors of this old paradigm. So cosmological inflation solves a problem introduced by particle physicists in the eras of grand unification, namely the monopole problem. These unwanted particles called magnetic monopoles, which might be formed in a very old universe, exponential expansion will dilute their number density. So inflation solves the horizon problem. It explains why the cosmic microwave background is to first approximation isotropic. It solves the flatness problem. Which is, why is the universe so large today? Why is it so old? It solves the entropy problem. And these are major successes of this old paradigm compared to the standard Big Bang model. But most important was a prediction which inflation made. And every good paradigm should make a prediction and not just a postdiction. And the key success of inflation is that it gave a mechanism based on causal physics for the generation of structure and the cosmic microwave anisotropies. And the layman's explanation for this mechanism is as follows. So if you plot physical distance versus time, period of inflation, post-inflation, so this is the usual Friedman-Robertson-Walk expansion, then the key distance for cosmology, which separates scales on which microphysics is important from scales on which gravity is important, this is the Hubble radius. And although now it is absolutely clear that the Hubble radius has nothing to do with the horizon, back in 2003, many people confused the notion of Hubble radius and horizon. The horizon, the causal limit, according to theories of space-time, that's the forward light cone from the beginning. And in inflation, obviously, the causal horizon is exponentially larger than the Hubble radius. So the Hubble radius is a scale which differentiates scales on which microphysics dominates from scales on which general relativity dominates. So in inflationary cosmology, all scales which are observed today in cosmology originate on sub-Hubble scales early on during inflation. And so you can imagine a demon stirring the soup of the hot early universe, creating waves in some causal way. These waves propagate, they freeze in on scales larger than the Hubble radius, and they become classical wave fluctuations today. And based on the time translation invariance of this de Sitter phase, you predict a scale invariant spectrum. So the prediction was firstly an almost scale invariant spectrum. And then there's something else, which I'll mention later. Now, the theory of cosmological perturbations have been well developed in these days, early days of cosmology. And it is very simple. You start with the action, which is the action of space-time plus matter. G is a determinant of metric. R is a Ricci scalar. For matter, I will just take a scalar field for simplicity. And we expand the metric and the matter about a Robertson-Walker metric. Using conformal time, I can write the metric including the perturbations, but not including gravitational waves in this way. So this phi is a function of x and t. X and conformal time eta, this characterizes the scalar metric fluctuations. And then we have matter, which is background matter plus fluctuations. The metric fluctuations and the matter fluctuations are not independent. They are related via the Einstein constraint equations. So there's only one degree of freedom for cosmological perturbations. So the idea is that we expand the action to a quadratic order about the background. The linear terms vanish because the perturbations satisfy the linear equations of motion. We are expanding about the solution of the equations. So to quadratic order, so this is quadratic in the perturbations, to quadratic order, this action can be nothing more than the action of a free scalar field with a time-dependent mass because we linearize. But we have a coupling to this background field. So without doing any calculations, you know that this action is going to be the action of a free scalar field. And the only non-trivial dependence can be the time-dependent mass. And calculations first done by Lukács and Chibyshov and Mukhanov in 1980, the historic times, gave the result that indeed this quadratic action is e4x. Times v prime square minus comma I, these are the spatial partial derivatives. And the mass term depends on the background. So this function of the background is scale factor times derivative of the background matter divided by the Hubble constant in conformal time. And this variable v, in terms of which the action for perturbations is canonically normalized, is simply the scale factor times matter perturbation minus plus phi naught prime over h times metric perturbation. So, and this, in many circumstances, this function of the background scales as a scale factor. So the physical meaning of this variable v is that it is scale factor times curvature perturbation in co-moving gauge for a co-moving observer, which is the quantity that we measure on small scales. So from, you can derive the equation of motion, which is a harmonic oscillator equation with a negative time-dependent mass. And you see that on small scales, on scales smaller than the Hubble radius, small scales, this term is negligible, and you get oscillations of v, vacuum oscillations. But these vacuum oscillations freeze out when the physical wavelength is equal to the Hubble length. And on larger scales, you get the squeezing of V. And this squeezing of V produces the second major success of inflation, namely it predicts the acoustic peaks of in the cosmic microwave background. So let me sketch that. If we have the timeline space recombination, an observer looking at the cosmic microwave background on different angular scales, the Hubble radius, what this squeezing does is it forces all fluctuation modes to be re-entering the Hubble radius. With a fixed phase, as standing waves with maximal amplitude. So at the time of recombination, you will catch this wave at maximal amplitude, this wave at maximal amplitude, this wave at minimal amplitude, and this is what will then give the acoustic features in the angular power spectrum of the microwave background. This ringing. And so, at this stage, let me show the data. So many Baroque models of structure formation, which were in existence before WMAP, were ruled out by the narrowness of these peaks. So this was a big success of this old standard paradigm of cosmology. But there was an embarrassment. And the embarrassment was that in order to get this excellent fit between theory, which is the red line, and the observations, which are the black dots, you had to assume that about 70% of the energy in the universe was in the form of something like a cosmological constant. So it's like a Copernican puzzle which cosmologists were faced with in 2003. Now there was other evidence that was consistent with this requirement that omega lambda had to be of the order 0.7. And this was the supernova data. The Hubble diagram for type 1a supernova had fairly high redshifts, not high by present standards, but high by the standards of 2002. These redshifts were fit not with a cosmology dominated by ordinary matter, but by a cosmology dominated by a cosmological constant. So, in spite of the key phenomenological successes of this old paradigm of cosmology, there was an embarrassment. Okay. So, at this stage, I would like to turn to the conceptual problems that some people already realized back in 2002. So the conceptual problems of the cosmology in 2002, in addition to this embarrassment, were the question of how to obtain inflation. Now, back in 2002, cosmologists were mostly very conservative, and they did not want to modify the theory of space-time. So they worked in the context of the Friedman-Robertson-Walk equations. And from these equations, it is clear that if you want to get almost exponential expansion, where rho has to be constant because h is constant, you need the pressure to be approximately minus the energy density. And if you stick to the conservative views that people had back in 2002, conservative from a mathematical point of view, but not from a physical point of view, you need scalar fields. Scalar matter fields. Because with scalar matter fields, the expressions for the energy density have contained terms which allow for an equation of state of the required form, because you have the possibility of having potential energy. So in order to get inflation, the slow roll paradigm developed. The scalar field model and the potential are arranged such that, and initial conditions are chosen such that the potential dominates over these other two terms for sufficiently long time. Now, one should remember that in 2002, no scalar field had been discovered. Now, as soon as you introduce fields, quantum fields, into your theory, so the introduction of scalar fields automatically leads to the cosmological constant problem. Because scalar field vacuum energy is physical, and the scalar field vacuum energy is predicted to be given by the supersymmetry breaking scale to the fourth power. And so you get the embarrassment that the predicted cosmological constant divided by the observed cosmological constant is larger than 10 to the 60, even for the smallest scale of supersymmetry breaking. Which makes this embarrassment even worse. Yeah, I agree with it, but it's, but in a purely classical description, it's just a parameter, and you have no particular reason for choosing any value of it. Whereas here, with scalar fields, there is a value which is predicted. Okay, so this cosmological constant problem actually has two aspects of it. It was perceived to have two aspects of it in 2002. The first question is the old problem of why is lambda so small? And the second problem is the coincidence problem. Given that it is not zero, why is it becoming important today? Okay. Now, there were other problems. And it's problems for inflation. So first of all, in order to get the right amplitude of cosmological perturbations to agree with the WMAP data, one had to tune parameters in the potential in a way which did not look natural. I will not address this now. Then many cosmologists were worried about the so-called transplanting problem, which is the fact that in calculating fluctuations in scalar field-driven models of inflation, where inflation lasts a long, long time, that perturbations, that the wavelength of all perturbations that we observe today is smaller than the Planck length long before the beginning of inflation. And so in principle, we are using, we were using an incomplete theory to calculate the main successful predictions. Another problem is the singularity problem. In the context of scalar field-driven inflation, there is an initial singularity, and so the theory is incomplete. And then finally, the basic mechanism of inflation, namely the fact that the potential energy gives rise to exponential expansion, is closely connected to the cosmological constant problem, because we know, we knew even back in 2002 that vacuum energy does not gravitate. So why should the constant part of a slowly varying potential energy gravitate? That was the Achilles heel of scalar field driven inflation. Okay, so these were some of the conceptual problems of the old cosmological paradigm. Okay, so the problem is we know since Pauli's time that vacuum energy does not gravitate. That's a cosmological constant problem. So in the absence of knowing what solves a cosmological constant problem, we have no right to assume that a constant part of potential energy actually enters the Einstein equations the way that classical energies enter. And in inflation, we are using exactly the constant part of the potential energy to drive inflation. The non-constant part is only giving us the end of inflation. Excuse me? Exactly. But this is inconsistent with the cosmological constant problem. So the basic mechanism of scalar field-driven inflation. But supersymmetry is broken. But supergravity does not address the cosmological constant problem, does not solve the cosmological constant problem. Negative. Yes, but there still is a mystery. But let me turn, because I do want to reach the key observational breakthroughs which led to a complete overturn in our paradigm of cosmology. So, now, I have to say a few words about the status of fundamental theory back in 2002. So, it was clear that quantum field theory was not the complete story. But many people were already working under the hypothesis that string theory was a theory that the quantum theory which unified all forces. So in quantum field theory, which gave rise to this old paradigm of cosmology, namely the inflationary scenario, point particles are the fundamental objects, as opposed to strings in string theory. And in quantum field theory, we can calculate the scattering of point particles. And in 2002, string theorists knew how to calculate string scattering as well. Now, in order to get inflationary cosmology out of field theory, it is obviously crucial to have a non-perturbative second quantized theory. Otherwise, you don't have potentials. Now, quantum string theory, non-perturbative string theory, was not yet developed back in 2002. So it should have been clear that crucial aspects for string cosmology could not even have been developed given the status of fundamental theory back in 2002. So as a consequence, many people working on the interface of string theory and cosmology back in 2002 were trying to force string theory into the paradigm of field theory cosmology. And right. How do you get potential? You need fields rolling to get inflation. Just from point particle scattering, you cannot get inflation. Sure, but you need this concept of a field. In the same way that it is now known that the notion of a string field plays a crucial role in string cosmology. One needs the field. Once you have a field, you then can describe the field classically. In the same way that once you have a string field, you can describe the string field. Classically. But anyway, so the string fields were not, the theory of string fields was not yet developed in 2002. And as a consequence, most cosmologists were trying to force string theory into the paradigm of the old cosmology. And that was neglecting non-perturbative stringy effects and other features. Well, let's go on and see in light of the historical developments where we're heading. So I'll come back to your question later. I'm brushing it off. Sorry. So there was obviously a good reason for thinking that string theory was going to be connected with inflation, because string theory contained many scalar particles, many scalar fields. So it's quite logical to think that string theory would give rise to inflation. Now, string theory had also led to many developments which are now considered to be crucial. Extra dimensions, brains, and so on. So although 95% of people working on the interface of fundamental theory and cosmology back in 2002 were working in the context of inflationary cosmology, there were some exceptions. There were some people, heretics, who were working on alternatives. And I guess I don't have time to write these ideas on the board, but there was a pre-Big Bang scenario in which the universe bounces and has a cold beginning. There was an ekpyrotic scenario in which two brains in five dimensions collide. There was a cyclic version of that scenario. And there was string gas cosmology. There were theories with varying fundamental constants. And there were also approaches to do cosmology with loop quantum gravity. However, back in 2002, it was clear that none of these alternative ideas matched the successes of inflationary cosmology. None of them solved the problems of standard Big Bang cosmology, in particular the size problem, in the same way that inflation does. Okay, so let's now turn to the key observational breakthroughs. But it at the cost of invoking scalar fields. Okay, so now the field of cosmology in 2002 was observation driven. Observations were way ahead of theory, and this continued for quite a few years. This is not a very good slide, but it shows a medium scale slice of the universe, slice of the sky, temperature, coding. This is a boomerang 2003 flight. The data became available in 2005. So there was a lot of progress in making improved anisotropy maps. And here you see an anisotropy map which looks exactly identical to the one that I showed you before, except that you have to realize that the angular scale is compressed by a factor of about 5. So improvements, so there was a big improvement in observations. And I have to come back to this slide in a little while. There were also polarization maps, all sky polarization maps produced. So by 2010, the polarization of a cosmic microwave background was well understood. So now the first surprise, or the first key development, came in 2012 with the clear indirect discovery of non-baryonic dark matter. It was through WIMP and through signatures of annihilation processes which happened in a dark globular cluster which had been discovered by an improved version of the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope a few years earlier. So weak lensing became, thanks to weak lensing, it was known where the dark matter was, and by focusing with gamma-ray telescopes on these regions where there was no baryonic matter, no light, but lots of dark matter, this key breakthrough was made. So dark matter was confirmed, the dark matter part of this old cosmological paradigm was confirmed. I forgot. It's been too long ago. So I forgot what the energy is. Now, for observational cosmology, there came a bad day. October 28, 2008. There were these famous developments in Washington. But since this is not a history talk, I do not want to talk about them further. I just want to mention that this set back cosmology in most of North America by several years. It also led to a big move of researchers from North America to other parts of the world. Actually, Canada benefited as well because the Kavli Institute for Cosmological Physics was relocated from Chicago to Waterloo. A new building was built beside the Perimeter Institute. Okay, so another observational. Okay. Now let's go back to the status of the supernova Hubble diagram back in 2002. So here you see the supernova, the magnitude difference as a function of redshift, which matches fairly well to a model with constant cosmological constant. Okay. So now, although the SNAP project was cancelled, there was a version of SNAP which was developed in China, and there were results reported in 2016, and these results showed some interesting oscillations. And although I don't have a PDF file of the data, this is an artist's conception of the data. So here you have this curve which corresponds to constant cosmological constant. But then the data seem to show oscillations about it, with a typical period of about one half of a Hubble time. So these observations have now been confirmed. So back in 2002, most cosmologists working on dark energy, this mysterious component that dominates the energy of the universe, were working in the context of scalar field models of dark energy. By 2020, this became completely baroque, although obviously one could reproduce this data by a scalar field model, but one did not. It was obvious that one was not going to learn about this. However, debates continued about what was the explanation for this. Okay. Now, 2015, the successor of the Planck mission, it came up with some very interesting discoveries. It made a map of the sky, and the initial data released just were a couple of 4 square degree patches. And if you look very carefully, you'll see here a line discontinuity in the temperature of the microwave background. Line discontinuity. However, at the same time, the angular spectrum of cosmic background anisotropies was measured to exquisite precision up to the 4th peak, showing that the predicted narrowness, predicted by the old paradigm, persisted. So here there was a puzzle. There were cosmic string line discontinuities, and at the same time, there was a signal in the angular power spectrum which was completely consistent with the old paradigm. So obviously, most theoreticians back in 2016, they thought that this was actually not a cosmic string. They came up with some other strange explanations for this. However, these explanations were blown away by the discovery from a successor of the Virgo collaboration that exactly the regions which corresponded to that string candidate, there was a burst of gravitational radiation which had exactly the profile which you would get from cosmic string kinks in colliding. So now you have the paradox that you have Doppler peaks, very sharp Doppler peaks, acoustic peaks, plus a cosmic string. So now if you want to hang on to the old paradigm of inflation, then you have two alternatives. You either have inflation before cosmic string formation, so cosmic strings form in a phase transition before inflation, after inflation. However, by the not so well known Trashon integral constraints, which date way back to 1985, You cannot create adiabatic perturbations on super Hubble scale, in a phase transition. You produce isocurvature perturbations, and you produce isocurvature perturbations, you don't get the narrowness of the Doppler peaks. So, inflation after cosmic string formation. Well, the cosmic strings are diluted. So, at this stage, one had to conclude that there was no inflation. The inflationary paradigm had to be replaced by something else. So, what is the new paradigm of cosmology? Well, the new paradigm is still not unique. There are two possibilities which are being hotly debated in 2027. Paradigm one. And the paradigm one is based on key developments in non-perturbative string theory, which took place in about 2020, which was the understanding of the non-perturbative structure of string theory as a matrix model. As a matrix model in which there is only background time, no background space, and space is generated in a phase transition, in the same way that was already understood back in 2002 in some condensed matter systems. So therefore, paradigm one has a timeline in which you have a matrix model phase, followed by a Hagedorn phase, which then leads to the usual Friedman-Robertson-Walker phase. No period of inflation. Now, it was known from this structure of matrix models that this matrix model transition could only give rise to spaces with the structure of R3 cross Calabi-Yau threefold, or R1 cross Calabi-Yau fourfold, or R5 cross Calabi-Yau twofold. No one cycles were permitted. So therefore, space was not, could not have been a torus. These dimensions are infinite, which addresses the size problem. It was well understood that in the Hagedorn phase, which is a quasi-static phase, string thermodynamics leads to a scale-invariant spectrum of fluctuations on all scales which are sub-Hubble during the Hagedorn phase. And since the Hagedorn phase is quasi-static, this means on all scales which are now observable in cosmology. So this paradigm one, which is based on non-perturbative string theory, it explains the flatness problem, the horizon problem, the entropy problem, and it generates adiabatic fluctuations. The adiabatic fluctuations are generated by the strings, and therefore there are some strings that remain without as adiabatic perturbations, consistent with this data. Now, however, it's not the only paradigm. The second paradigm is a bit more conservative. It is viewed as a little bit more conservative even today. And it is based on something that was already known in 2002, namely heterotic N theory. Higher dimensions play a crucial role. You have orbifold fixed planes, a brain gas, and the time evolution proceeds the following way. You have a phase one in which you have bulk expansion driven by these brains, this brain gas. Once the bulk density gets diluted to a sufficiently low value, the potential between these orbifold fixed planes takes over. The extra dimensions start contracting. But during this both phases, the projected energy density remains constant because the brain gas is dominated by three brains. So the energy density projected onto a brain is constant. So the extra dimensions, they contract, but they are, don't contract to zero size, but string gas cosmology effects. Stabilize the extra dimension at the string scale via a process known as tachyonic production of massless modes at the self-dual radius, a mechanism which was already understood, which was developed in the years between 2002 and 2005. So this is a scenario in which you solve the horizon size and entropy problems by having sufficient non-inflationary expansion in both of these two phases. The presence of extra dimensions and brains is absolutely crucial. Perturbations are created in the contracting phase in a way that is similar to what was postulated already back in 2002 in the context of the ekpyrotic scenario. And in the context of string gas cosmology, these perturbations go nice and smoothly through the bounds, through this stabilization phase. Skate invariant bulk perturbations become skate invariant brain perturbations. You have a mechanism of formation of adiabatic fluctuations with a skate invariant spectrum. The brains are deposited onto our overfold fixed planes, giving rise to these cosmic strings. Okay, now. Cosmology is not solved today. There are big problems. Is paradigm one right, or is paradigm two right? So as you all know, there's an intense observational effort to find new observational measures with which to distinguish between these two paradigms. But I don't have time to talk about it. There's also questions about what selects this from the various other possibilities which are allowed by non-perturbative string theory. So in 2002, it looked like some cosmologists thought that cosmology was solved in spite of the conceptual problems that that the standard paradigm was facing in 2002. Well, now in 2027, we should not be lured into believing that cosmology is solved, even though we have new paradigms. The conceptual problems which these two paradigms offer are probably of similar severity, but at a deeper level than the problems that were present in 2002. So we should not be misled to think that cosmology is solved in 2027. So, thanks, and I have to put this up. I have to give credits for the last section. Thanks.
Okay, questions?
Well, this is just a comment in the spirit of the same fun. There was the third paradigm, and the third paradigm was inspired by the discovery in 2009 by GLAST 1 of an energy dependence in the speed of photons at the Planck scale, which together with the confirmation of a GZK cutoff by Auger confirmed that the asymptotic symmetry is deformed special relativity, or with a cosmological constant, is a quantum deformed version of De Sitter, thus ruling out all string theories, all perturbative string theories studied till then, but predicted by loop quantum gravity. Meanwhile, the cosmological models with bounces coming from loop quantum gravity were developed, and it was shown how to solve the problems of inflation by a mechanism similar to the early stage of paradigm one, which indeed was already under study, by non-locality coming from a matrix model in which underlies the spin foam model. The spectrum of fluctuations was created before the bounce, as in paradigm two. Okay? And this paradigm was moving by 25 years, by 2027, happily along. And meanwhile, string theorists were still trying to discover if there was a version of string theory consistent with the observations of GLAST.
So see, my view is a bit more conservative. Actually, way in the back. This is a problem today. There are various possibilities. There's, for example, a possibility that was already known in 2002, namely a causal set explanation. So there's one class of researchers who think that it's an infrared problem, another class of researchers thinking that this is a manifestation of the underlying discrete structure of space and time. I ran out of time, Nima. I agree completely.
I just want to make a comment about the famous, infamous, egregious problem of the cosmological constant. As we know, inflation, the inflation mechanism depends significantly on the issue of the cosmological constant. And as you say, there's a factor of 10 to the power 60 or more between the present so-called observed value of the cosmological constant and what you need for inflation to get 60 e-folds. First of all, the whole problem started when we identified the cosmological constant with the vacuum energy, the so-called zero-point energy. And this is apart from the geometrical constant, the bare cosmological constant that occurs in Einstein-Hilbert classical action. And as we know, when you calculate the zero-point vacuum energy, it's quantically divergent, it's infinite. And this is obviously a serious issue with field theory and gravity. The other point is that one has never seen, observed this vacuum energy. It's incorrectly stated in the literature that, that the Casimir energy is in fact already an observation of a zero point vacuum energy. That's not actually strictly true. And because you can calculate the Casimir force from a straightforward QED calculation without ever referring to the zero-point vacuum energy. So we've never detected this stuff, okay? And this is part of modern physics. A lot of what we do is based on something we never detect, like dark matter and dark energy. And I find this is a serious issue with the whole paradigm one, as you put it. And I appreciate the fact that you stressed this.
Yeah, Robert, I wanted to ask about the narrow acoustic peaks. And as you said, the inflation gives rise to the phase coherence in a natural way, which leads to these narrow acoustic peaks, which are
Actually, any theory that predicts primordial adiabatic perturbations gives that.
Yeah, that's
so this
probably
is the test of primordial adiabatic perturbations.
Yeah, that's probably the question I'm coming to is some people have tried to reverse that argument and say that the existence of the narrow acoustic peaks is evidence for inflation.
Yeah, but that's incorrect because any theory which produces adiabatic fluctuations will produce these peaks. And there are many ways to get a scale invariant spectrum of adiabatic fluctuations. That is already known today. So the problems of improving on inflationary cosmology, the main problem is really the size problem right now. It's not a problem of having a mechanism to generate almost scale invariant adiabatic fluctuations. Yes, there is. And you'll see that. You know about that. Because it's been done on your floor. And it will appear shortly. That's where my credits come in. So Ali Nayeri is going to put out a paper on that.
Okay. As I see, there is no more questions, or maybe too many. And let us thank the speaker for this nice overview. okay, and after this magnificent journey back to the future in the field of cosmology, let us see what was going on in particle physics. This is a talk by Arkany Hamed.
I'm afraid my talk is going to be relatively different. When Justin asked me to give this talk with this title, I was in the middle of running from a meeting to a class. And he said, hey,